Self-care. It's such a deep, layered word, and for me, it's really become the process of getting to know yourself, showing up for yourself over and over again. In creation of the Self-Care Creature podcast, I want to teach you, too, how to have a relationship with yourself. We're going to dive into the psychological and physiological unfoldings of adopting what I love to call a self-care lifestyle. This podcast is here to help you, the stressed out but spiritually minded individual who can feel that wild calling in your heart, who wants to develop self-care rituals to support your daily living, give you the confidence and know-how to live through your intuition and raise your self-worth. You deserve it. You are capable of this. And I want to help you understand how the hell to get there, what it actually means, and how do you actually live it. That's where my intention is with this podcast. The Self-Care Creature Podcast, brought to you by me, your host, Courtney Klopp. Let's dive in. I am here with my friend Laura today that I know from my self-awareness for social justice class originally. And today we are going to dive into a fun conversation about, is neurodivergence a superpower? Is it possible? Would you like to share anything about yourself off the bat before we just jump into this conversation, Laura?
I think more about me will become a lot more apparent as we talk, but I'm Laura, as Courtney already said. I'm currently living in Scotland, so I'll try and make any references that I talk about. I'll try and make sure I'm making sure it's applicable to both the US and here. I grew up in Cyprus, as I know many of you might notice that I have a very unusual accent, so I'm probably gonna put that in there now. I'm queer, I'm neurodivergent. I think those are maybe the biggest things.
Great. Awesome. Well, then I'll just jump into the first question. Neurodivergence is a term that some people may not be familiar with. I feel like it's pretty maybe you can agree with me, but I feel like I'm in a bubble and I hear about it all the time and it's very fascinating. Yep. And it's definitely given me a lot of tools. The language has given me a lot of tools to understand myself better. But would you mind providing perhaps a brief explanation of what neurodivergence encompasses and what distinguishes it from like neurotypical?
Yeah, sure. So one thing I want to note before I go into this is that I've deliberately picked this definition because these are not rooted in ableism. So there's like many different ways to define it, but my personal favorite is this. It's from someone called Lived Experience Educator, if I've got their handle right. But neurodivergent is an umbrella term used to describe an individual whose mind or functioning diverges from dominant societal norms, standards, or expectations, including learning, processing, interpreting, feeling, behaving, communicating, and more. So in practice, that might be something like OCD, PTSD, ADHD, ASD. So you're looking at like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or autistic spectrum disorder. And if you note, those all have the word disorder in them, mm-hmm. which is not a neutral term. And a lot of there's a big discussion in that community around the inclusion of them as a disorder and the fact that the DSM, which is where that comes from, is not a neutral source of information. It's like based in like colonialism and capitalism and white supremacy. So for example, homosexuality was in the DSM at one point. So I think that's a really, really important thing to think about. So yeah, it's basically an umbrella term that describes a bunch of different quote unquote disorders or brain functioning.
Okay. Yeah. I love that definition. And I wrote down that person's handle too. So I'll include it in the show notes for anybody. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about your personal journey and experience with neurodivergence? Because this is part of what has really made me want to have this conversation with you more. Like, we talk on a pretty regular basis, almost weekly basis. And I really admire the way that you navigate the world and particularly like your workplace. Yeah. So what does it mean to you? How has it influenced your life? Yeah.
I'm going to try and keep this on one continuous thread. Anyone that has ADHD will know that tangents are very likely. So I hope that this makes sense. So I think like many people, especially many women, I came to realizing that I was neurodivergent like very late in life, like within the last, say, 10 months or so. And I work with someone who is autistic and has ADHD in like a healing capacity. And I had said to them, like, what the hell is going on? Like, how am I only suddenly noticing the full breadth of this experience? And they were like, it's because you're not, oh, I knew this would happen. What is the word? The word has entirely just escaped me. See, this is my neurodivergence playing out in real time, which is always really fun.
Right.
Disassociated. The word I wanted was disassociated. So I'm not disassociated from myself, and I'm fully noticing all of these things. So when I look back, and if I look at my life through this kind of neurodivergent lens, it was like really clear that it's always been there. So for me, it plays out in myriad ways. Like a lot of them are around sensory sensitivity. So, for example, I have never been able to have labels in my clothes. Or, like being a small child, we would go on holiday and my mom would have to have several swimsuits for me because I couldn't stand being in a wet swimsuit. So, like little things like that, where like obviously it's not just that, but as you add them all up, you realize. So, I
Yeah.
think for me, weirdly, it was kind of the COVID pandemic that I think really started to shift things because all of a sudden, everything was quiet. There was this awful thing going on in the world, but like nobody was driving to work. There was no traffic noise. There was no social functions or obligations, and everything was just so much calmer. And I think my nervous system finally had a chance to be like, oh, I think we like this. I think this is good. And at that point, I also started taking the class with you. So then there was that element of healing and awareness and noticing. And when you combine all that together, I think it really came to a head in December of this year, where I was just like, why can't I function in the same way that I had anymore? And I think this is one of the, there's a big kind of discussion, and I'm saying that in air quotes, around people self-diagnosing and like these rates are really high and like this is a problem, and we can get into that later. But I think for me, I'd seen a lot of stuff around that and I was just very curious. So I started reading the book Unmasking Autism by Dr. Devon Price. And low key, I kind of feel like it's a bit like if you're straight, you're not Googling, am I gay? If you're looking at this material, you're probably neurodivergent or like someone that you love is, and maybe you're looking it up for them. But there were several paragraphs in this book where I recognized myself in a way that I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And it started to make sense of this, like, as I was coming more into myself and being less and less like disassociated, I started to realize, like, oh, I think this might be me. And there was one specific line where it talked about a hair falling in someone's face and the way that neurons, so in a neurodivergent brain, a lot of the neurons are hyperexcitable, so you can't like filter out stimuli. And it was the hair falling in someone's face. And I'm like, yeah, I can't stand that. Like, I cannot stand to have a loose hair on me. It's like I react to it as if someone is setting me on fire. Like, that's the level of like discomfort and distress that it gives me. And it was this moment of like, wait, not everybody has that experience. That and like
Yeah.
as a little anecdote, I had a personal training session like decades ago, and I was like sprinting on the treadmill, and I like jumped to the sides, and the guy's like clearly like looking at me like, oh my God, what is wrong? Like thinking something serious had happened, that like maybe my knee had gone, and I literally had a hair on my face and I couldn't continue sprinting at full speed because I had this hair on my face. And it was just all
Yeah.
of these with this lens and all of these things and people sharing about their experiences, and I was like, oh, okay. And then obviously working with Maritza, who I work with in like a healing capacity. Yeah, there's just a lot there. I was like, okay, so I think that's maybe it in a nutshell. That was probably me realizing, but I think when I look back, I'm like, it was always there. I just happen to have a lot of privilege that has meant that I've been able to navigate the world easier than people that don't have that level of privilege.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's just, thank you for sharing that. That's a really beautiful just journey and story that I can also relate to quite a bit. And Maritza is your therapist, is that right?
They or wouldn't coach? Use that term.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they, again, there's maybe a whole conversation around that, but a lot of therapeutic tools and languages, I think, are kind of based in oppressive practices, dynamics, probably not doing this justice. So they were a full-time therapist. They had their two qualifications. The name, they both begin with L. Like, that's the bit that reminds me of my head. But like, I work with them in like a healing capacity.
Okay, cool. I love that language too. Just the healing capacity, working with someone in a healing capacity. Beautiful. Do you mind if I ask you, and you can totally pass on this question because I know it's not part of our notes. did you seek diagnosis, or are you also more self-diagnosed, or can we talk about that piece for a moment?
Of course. I currently haven't gotten like a formal kind of medical diagnosis for like several reasons.
Okay.
One, there is a big discussion around that. And for me, one of the big things is it's not pulling resources from anyone. So I think there's this whole thing around like, if people are self-diagnosing, then they're going to take up all these resources. And I'm like, dude, what resources?
Yeah.
Like obviously some people have, like are able to get like maybe a prescription for Adderall or a medication that they find useful, but like most people, that's not the majority of people. It's a really long and arduous process.
Right.
Mine would be complicated by the fact that like I'm based here, but a lot of like the people in my life would have been based overseas. And there's a lot that they don't take into account in terms of, or they don't seem to take into account in the diagnostic criteria, like masking. Like a lot of women especially mask, which is basically a way of like hiding your symptoms, so appearing quote unquote normal. So to other people you may seem okay, but everything is happening like internally. So how would someone else know about your own experience? And obviously I can't be diagnosed. You have to have the diagnosis from a professional, it's someone who specializes in that area, but I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth. Let's just say I'm fairly confident that I am, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I also think that it's not any less valid. I think that if you find something that really works for you, that really isn't pulling anything from anywhere else and it helps you, great, you know? And I think a lot of the things that have helped me or would be helpful to pretty much anyone, really. If like, if you find the way that works with your brain, whatever your brain needs, like, I think it makes a difference.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I also am not officially diagnosed, and that's why I always just say that I am on a neurodivergent spectrum, and I haven't actually even read like specific. Well, actually, hold on, I'm putting my foot in my own mouth. I read most of the book, Scattered Minds, which is like so ironic to say that about ADHD from Dr. Capermonte. Note to self, let's circle back and finish that. But I just really resonate with what you're sharing about how much it, like, you can find the language and read some books, and like when you're realizing, oh, this is clicking for me, and then you can use those tools to help yourself out in everyday life. I think that's amazing and that's really cool. But then did you ever find in your journey of kind of developing this language and learning about this that you did you ever feel kind of fucked up, like realizing like, oh shit, like that's me, and like did it ever, you know what I mean, like kind of send you in a little spiral? Or
yeah, and I think sometimes I still get this, not consistently, not all the time, but sometimes you'll have another realization and be like, oh wow. I think and I think something that I really try and I'm very aware of before I get into this is like trying not to judge other people with the knowledge that I have now, right? So like it would have been lovely if the people in my life, I have some incredible people in my life, if they had realized when I was younger and there were like really clear signs. And also, I truly believe that they did the best they could with the resources they had. And if they had known better, they probably would have done better. And they didn't know. And I think it's only with social media and like a lot of this knowledge isn't being gatekept in the same way. And even so, I found this hilarious. But like, so as I'm reading some books, you know, obviously it's classic sort of ADHD rabbit hole I've gone down. I'm like, oh my God, I must devour all of this information. And now trying to retain my train of thought. I don't know how other ADHDers do this. Like, what do they do? Just keep talking until they find it, and then people have to edit the podcast quite a lot. Anyway, what was the question again? My experience of ADHD.
Yeah, what was the question? Damn, this is hilarious. Here we are. Like,
Oh my God, I'm
no,
sorry.
you're
I mean,
good.
I actually feel like this is probably a really useful interaction. Like, if someone doesn't have ADHD, it's probably a really useful insight into the way that like my mind works, and that I can genuinely be mid-sentence and forget. And like,
Yeah.
this is one thing. It happens to me in job interviews, and I'm just like, oh my God. It was something about going down the rabbit hole of ADHD.
Yes. And I just
Reading.
asked the question myself, like trying to retrace it back myself. I'm taking notes here on this side as well. And like my brain is a little split in our attention, right? Which is like so hilarious. Well, I noted down what time it is, so if we feel like we need to go back and edit it, that's fine. But I do love what you're saying, like the real time experience of noticing this, like two neurodivergent people just being like, did you remember?
No, but I was
Oh.
gonna say that like one thing that's made a big difference for me, and somehow they're connected, so I'm gonna trust that my brain will bring me back,
Yes.
is being able to be like really open and honest about it with it at work, and that has made a huge difference.
Yeah.
And like, so even like I shared a couple of books with a couple of people, just be like, this might be really useful, it might help you understand. Yeah, I can feel that I'm distracted because I'm thinking of trying to find the answer to this other question. I think maybe we move on and then we have
Yeah,
to come back and
absolutely.
just.
Not a problem. Would you care to share more about that being open and honest at work and how, like, what that has been like?
Yeah, so of course. So I work at a university. So in some respects, that's actually really great because it means that there is a whole host of resources and people and things that should, in theory, know about neurodivergence, right?
In theory.
And yeah, I am very lucky that I have. So I started this job in January. So, like, peak me, this like really hitting me with full. Oh, I've remembered your question. It was about the grief around neurodivergence. That was what it
Oh,
was.
okay.
Okay, I'm gonna roll back or something along those lines. So basically, what I was gonna say was that yeah, it's quite a painful situation to sometimes realize how much easier I think life could have been if you'd had these tools and maybe not, you know, learning them at 32, 33 years old. If I had had these tools my whole life, how different would it have been? And I think I was saying that I try not to judge other people by that standard. To me, it feels very akin to, if any queer people have had this experience, but like watching something like Heartstopper that's really sweet and really affirming and really lovely, but also having the grief that you wish you had had this then, you wish you had had this language, this affirmation, that representation then when you were a kid, right? Like, I think it's both.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky and I had some amazing teachers. And for example, I went to a really small school, so there was that things that like didn't get interpreted negatively that I would do because the classes were small, that it didn't really matter. Like, I would interrupt in history all the time, but my final year, like my final 2 years of school, there were two people in the class, so it really didn't matter, right? It was tiny.
Okay.
Whereas if that was a bigger, less funded school with like 45 people, yeah, it would have had a very different impact on my life. So I'm very aware of that and like the positionality that I hold within that. But yeah, like sometimes it's really tough to, or even sometimes both tough and kind of beautiful to realize something about yourself and be like, oh, there's nothing wrong with me. This is just how my brain works. And it's kind of like a relief. So the other day I read something about autism and sort of coaching in a sort of personal training capacity. And they were talking about things that make it better. And I was like, okay, so this might be why I am one of those people that I'm like, you need to poke me into place. And like, consensually, please poke me into the position that you want me to be in. Because if you try and tell me, I won't understand it. Like, you need to physically like poke at my back to get me to retract my shoulder blades. Once you've done that, I understand it. But without that cue, I don't get it. And it's that realization of like, oh, maybe that's why that wasn't like, I, that didn't come so naturally to me. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot. And I think I have several friends who are sort of late diagnosed, and to quote Maritza, I was having the prototypical response. When I was like crying, it was just like, oh my god, this is so much. And they were like, yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah,
it's a lot to realize, because it makes you shift. And it made me really sad for younger me, and like what could have been, what I could have done if I had known and had all of these tools and things. And I'm really grateful that I get them now, when we get to have these conversations and speak so openly about it, right?
Yes, absolutely. Oh my gosh, I'm just like vibrating. I feel like you just said so many amazing things in all of that share. And I also like, here is like a neurodivergent superpower, right? Like ping ponging around, we're like holding multiple conversations at the same time right here. And I just want to reiterate some of these things you said that really stuck out to me. I need to clear my throat. You said like coming to the realization that nothing is wrong with me. This is just how my brain works. And it's moving through that shift of learning how to support yourself differently, which is what I'm all about in life. And I love that you also use the word grief, because there's a lot of grief there to recognize, like, yeah, like you're saying, holding that grief and that sadness for younger you. And then also even taking that to the macrocosm of the world at large. Like, we haven't had this language. We haven't had the tools. Like, there's a lot of grief in that, especially when you think of like generational trauma. And exactly as you're saying, like, our caretakers perhaps would have done different if they had known different, and that just like literally didn't exist in the world at the time. And so I just very deeply resonate with this. Sometimes realizing these things about ourselves, it's like, oh shit, like, fuck, like I can see all of a sudden, like I maybe never was a normal person. Like I've always been a little fucking weird. And you know, I just thought that was the way I am. And oh, it turns out I've got like, my brain works differently. And then it's like, actually, what if, and we can talk about the power of what if questions, but what if that's actually okay? And what if you can learn to support yourself in that space? And what if it makes you that much more capable of showing up in your day-to-day life? Yeah. And so with that, let's circle back, if you don't mind, to talking about the work environment.
Work, yeah.
Yes.
So I have a really incredible line manager. They absolutely know that. I've definitely told them that.
A line manager, you said?
Yeah. Is that not a, is, so.
I'm like in so the line cooking manager industry.
Is someone you report to. So I would be their direct report. I'd be his direct report.
Okay.
So there's like a vertical line in like an organizational chart. So like I'm directly below them, basically. But yeah, he's been really great. I'm very open, and for me, that has probably made almost the biggest difference, more than anything else. Being able to go and say, like, just be really honest and open, and I was really lucky that when I came into this job, so I started in January, I was in a place and a position where I had done enough like healing and introspective work, and I was much more confident in myself that I knew going in, like, there are certain boundaries that I'm going to uphold. There's certain things about myself that I refuse to compromise on. And so in that sense, I was very sure of myself.
Yeah.
Going into an entirely new environment that was incredibly stimulating, the first few months were a lot. And it wasn't really a choice to be really open about it. It was like I kind of need to be really open about it, because otherwise not you're gonna know, but like for me, it didn't feel like a choice. It felt like a necessity to be open. And thankfully, I was met with like just like really real like kind of love, I guess, and understanding. I also have some like really incredible colleagues who are much more like friends. One of them also has ADHD, so it's been really lovely to just be able to share those experiences that maybe someone else won't understand. So if you have like, so one thing that's common with ADHD is rejection sensitivity, so like the tone of an email or something. So I had emailed this, as an example, I'd emailed a senior person and they had replied, and I was like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, I think they're mad at me, I haven't met them yet, and oh my god, and you know, it's this big thing. And I was like, hey, you two have met this person, like, is that the tone? And they're like, oh no, this person's lovely, it's probably just that they're genuinely curious and wanting to help. And I was like, okay, my god. And then, you know, months later I met them and I was like, oh yeah, you were totally right about that. But just having that where someone understands at that real deep level of like, oh, you're not being weird, like your brain genuinely feels this way, makes a big difference. I think I'm also really lucky in that the job that I work is very flexible. So for context, I'm a project manager, so I kind of get to within reason dictate the pace. So if I'm having like a really bad day, unless there's any something that needs to get done that day, I'm able to slow it down and then pick it up on another day to sort of balance out my own brain. And I live really close to work, so I work flexibly, I work from home, I can go into the office. And something I really learned, and I kind of, it really is to kind of put myself first, but in a really caring way. So like almost treating yourself like a baby, right? So if you go out as a baby or with a baby, you would think absolutely nothing of making sure that you had everything that they needed. So you would have their like the American diaper bag. I was gonna say a nappy bag. I was like, that's not what you call it. Their like binky or their pacifier or their dummy, their like bottles, maybe some burping cloth, extra clothes, like diapers, like teething rings, all of these things, right? You go prepared because this baby has a bunch of different needs and you want to make sure that you can meet all of them.
Yeah.
That is exactly how I approach taking care of myself. Because the one thing that I really, I mean, it may happen and I may have no control of it and I just have to surrender to it. I never want to have a meltdown at work because they are so exhausting. And if I'm in the like the wrong company, i.e. I'm not around people that I know, it would be really distressing for me. Ignoring that there's also probably a lot of stigma and things. So like a meltdown, for those of you that aren't aware, like I will either completely lose my shit, is basically how it's like I might start yelling at someone, because what's happening is I'm so overstimulated and so dysregulated that like I just cannot, or I'll just start crying. Neither one is generally considered professionally appropriate in a work context, right? Unless it's like a therapy session, at which point you need to be the client and not the therapist, right?
Right.
So for me, one of the things that was really revolutionary was really taking that care with myself. So it's like making sure I have the noise cancelling headphones, making sure I have like the sunglasses, you know, when the lights get too bright, or making sure I always have snacks, like in meetings. Like, I'm sure everybody has noticed, I got a big meeting for snacks. My laptop bag is my laptop and a bunch of snacks and various, like, things that I can stim with so that I don't get, like, too obviously, like, restless.
Yeah.
You know, this things like that, that it's making sure that I am the number one priority. And by doing that, that allows me to show up, like, as my best self and be focused and present and doing all of these things. And I think for me, one of the most revolutionary things, and this is like possible because I'm not working a job where I need to clock in and clock out and I am trusted, was the first time that I was like, oh my God, this office is so overstimulating for me. And I was like white knuckling it. I was like, come on, like we can stay, we can stay. And I was like, what if I just go home? What if I just go home? Because it's like genuinely, it's a 20 minute walk. So worst case scenario, if I felt that I needed to, I could either go take it, like take that as like an early lunch break, or I could just work a bit later in the evening if I wanted to, or if I needed to.
Yeah.
But knowing that I can do that, like takes the pressure off in a way that I can't even describe.
Yeah.
So it's things like that, but also the environment where I can say to colleagues, I'm like, oh my God, I'm really struggling. And they've just been, yeah, they've all been so loving and so supportive, and it's made it like the biggest difference. Like, I can't tell you the difference that it makes to have, even if it's just one or two key people that know and understand and deeply get it, you're just like, yes. Like, one of my colleagues was telling a story about their friend's autistic child, and I was like, you get it. Like, they were talking about masking, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But yeah, so I don't know if that answers the question, which I've entirely forgotten.
I know, I'm like, where are we in that? Well, I think you were just sharing like your journey of being open and honest at work, really. And I'm so stoked. I love like analogies and metaphors and this idea of like treating yourself like a little babe. Not only does that also bridge to like possibly like inner child healing as well and that kind of stuff. That's just incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Like, support yourself the way you need so that you can be the best version of yourself to be able to go out into the world and be there with and for other people. Like, 'cause it's never, that's what I always say about self-care, and especially like being a self-care creature, so to speak, is that it's never about you. It's never just about you. It's about how you can show up in the world and go out into the world. So I really fucking love that. I especially love your like, yeah, I got my laptop bag and it has my laptop and snacks. Like, yeah, like it might seem there. I feel like for me, maybe it's just because I'm a humorous person, but there's a lot of like, it feels like silly or things that I can like deeply relate to. But then it's like, this is the shit that works for me. This is what I need. Did you have a thought about that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think as well, like, but with that as well, I think you really need to show up kind of giving zero fucks. Like, because people, if they don't understand, and again, like, I'm not, the people that know, know. And there's other people that I work with in a shared office that I don't necessarily care to explain. And I just haven't, because it takes a lot of emotional energy. Like, I'm like, if you know, you know. But like, to truly explain, there is a big conversation that generally needs to happen if someone isn't already in the world of like neurodivergence, good use of language, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes I just don't have the spoons, I don't have the energy to have that conversation with them. But people will comment on it. So like, the other day I took in two pairs of shoes. Because for anyone listening, I am absolutely tiny, and in the meeting that I was in, I can't touch the floor unless I'm wearing like big ass heels, which I obviously wasn't going to wear all day, and I didn't feel like wearing trainers because I wanted to embody a specific look. So I took in two pairs of shoes, which other people were just like kind of low-key like, the fuck, this is a bit strange. Cool, I'm taking care of myself. I'm quite happy with that. Like, it does require a little bit of like, I don't care, I am my priority. Like, the time that I went to a gig, and obviously they open your bag and search it, right? And you know, they're probably used to finding, I don't know, like pills and maybe condoms or whatever. In my bag, there was like a little sensory fluffy toy to help calm me down, and like myriad snacks and a bottle of water. And I'm sure this guy was just like, that's a first. And I was all proud of myself for like being like, I did it. I took care of myself. Like, clearly just slightly confused.
Yes, I love, thanks for reiterating that. Like, yes, people will comment on it. Like, yeah. And they may make their own assumptions and their own labels. Like, you know, the shoe thing, is she high maintenance? Like, or like, you know, who knows what people might think. But it's what I hear you really speaking to, and you said this too, in being in the workplace, it's like being honest and open. And I think that that comes from a place of deep self-acceptance. And I want to make sure that as we're having this conversation and we're sharing about these amazing things, just reminder wherever you as the listener may be in your own journey of neurodivergence, that it really is a journey, because working through that self-acceptance piece, like that in and of itself takes time. It takes a lot of time. Like, so I don't want to downplay like your ability to just walk in and own it, because that's something that is cult was cultivated and was a practice over time.
And like, so for, I'll give a really, like, for me, it felt like a really poignant example, but Where I work has a very casual dress place. So like I mean, I couldn't necessarily go in like full on sweats, but I can absolutely, I've gone in leggings before, for example. But I was still kind of nervous because we have like a professional element to where I work. Like they have like professional degree programs like medicine or something, right? So like I was like, I sort of knew this and I was like, oh, this might be, maybe they're more like, to use a very Scottish phrase, like very suited and booted, right? Like, and so when I saw like the most senior person on the like professional services staff side, and she was wearing a very sort of chill outfit in like maybe my first 5 days, she just walked into the office and I was like, oh my God, that's her, she's lovely. But like the relief, I cannot tell you the relief that went flooding through my body when I realized that this was genuinely okay, and that I can show up on the days that I am struggling. I can show up in the most casual outfit when I need like almost nothing to be touching my skin, because I'm so like just such a like, I don't really like using the word bad, but I'm going to use it here. Such a bad or such an overwhelming sensory day that I need to be in like the most relaxing clothes I can manage. Those kind of things, like it has been very hard won and has come in stages. Absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that. I want to circle back real quick to masking just a little bit because I'm wondering if there's like, I understand masking as, yeah, basically being able to quote, like, put on a face to fit in to like whatever the situation may be. And I'm just, I guess, I don't even know if this is a question or if I'm just like pondering this, but I'm like, I'm thinking of, yeah, if you are like, don't know that you have neurodivergence, you haven't fully accepted it, or like whether you're conscious or not of masking, but it's like going in and just like you were saying, kind of like white knuckling it through the day. And but maybe you don't even know you're white knuckling it. It's just like you're like just putting up with whatever, because but you're ultimately you're really uncomfortable underneath all of that. And so I'm just thinking about how masking is like, how can how is masking supportive and also not supportive is kind of like the thought process running through my mind.
Oh, I really like the question. I think in a sense, and it depends on like supportive of what, right? So supportive of me, supportive of the status quo.
Of yourself in this context. Great clarification there.
I think of me, and I have a very complicated relationship with what I think I'm about to say, which is that sometimes it kind of is almost necessary. Or it can feel like it is, you know, kind of, and it, for me, it kind of goes side and side hand in hand or side by side. There we go, with kind of concepts of like professionalism or things, right? So, I'm kind of aware. There's actually been only one instance where I have really felt that like I had to mask, and that's because, thankfully, no one is seeing all of the expressions on my face. But for anyone that obviously doesn't know me, you can read my face like a book. And it's something that I've been consistently told throughout my entire life. Like, you can read your face like a book. But it also doesn't just work as like a mirror to my emotions. It kind of works more like a megaphone. So if I'm thinking, don't really like this, what my face is apparently showing is what in the actual fuck? It's something like that, right? So sometimes in situations like that, the ability to mask that kind of thing would be fantastic, but it is so expensive. And when I say expensive, I mean like cognitively, emotionally. Like I think I've consciously had to do it once when I was at work, and I felt like I had to do it. And it was one of those situations where you realize it's happening, and then you can't access your rational, flexible thinking because you're in that moment of like, oh shit, this isn't appropriate. What do I do? So you go to the default response, which is masking. Yeah, I was crying after it. I was so exhausted from like, because it was like an hour, and I was just like, oh my God. Thankfully, I don't have to do that very often. But I think there is an element in which being that kind of quote unquote professional and saying the right things and doing the thing is very kind of can be useful at times if it's something that you can use. And I think I, as I've kind of learned to just be more myself, I can see that sometimes it doesn't always play in my favor. And I think people don't. So, for example, and this could be me reading into it. So, if they listen, I don't think they will. But like, if they listen, I would absolutely say this to their face. So, I had a very big presentation, and I could feel some apprehension. So that may be like one of the superpowers. Like, I can feel people's emotions in a way that I cannot even describe to you. So, like, watching cringy things on TV. Absolutely not, cannot do it. I would genuinely rather like take a cheese grater to my skin. Like, cannot stand that at all. Anyway, and I was like, is it because they think I'm going to be this open and this honest the way that I am with them in this kind of very senior, very formal setting? And I could feel, and I was like, oh, because you don't know that I cannot do this. It's just that it's so much work for me to not do this that I generally don't, because I also find that there's not masking for me is kind of very advantageous, because I think a lot of people, and this may be a very British thing, so I don't know if this is a uniquely British thing, but like people aren't very direct and they don't necessarily say what they exactly mean, so there's like many ways you can interpret things.
Absolutely.
So I will just say the thing. If it's something that isn't like, obviously, I would hopefully never say something that's offensive, but if it's something, if I'm just stating a fact, I'm like, is it this or is it this thing that I'm naming? It makes other people uncomfortable because they're not used to having it named. But in that sense, it's a superpower, because I think the ability to just be really honest and open and direct with things, I think it makes life far, far easier.
Yeah,
But that might be my
absolutely.
own bias.
And I might be a little biased too, but I completely agree. I'm just like kind of thinking and maybe even processing slightly in real time right now around this masking is just really fascinating to me. And I feel similarly. Like I don't feel like it necessarily takes a lot of, what did you call it? Not energy. You had said it.
Spoons.
That was one word. It's okay. It's essentially the same thing. I just liked the word that you had used. Well, you just said that it was very expensive. That's what you meant. And by that, like it t and I interpreted that as, yeah, it takes a lot of energy. I don't personally experience that necessarily. I think if I, maybe it's because of my own level of self-acceptance, like I feel like I'm going to do my best. And if I'm in a professional setting, like I know how to be professional. And I also know that like I'm a quirky person and sometimes I'm going to stutter. Sometimes I'm going to forget things. Sometimes like, I'm going to own who I am in the midst of this professionalism. And so in that way, I feel like masking in and of itself, yeah, it could be its own other superpower. And it's just, I guess it's just like, it's fascinated by thinking about that. Lost my train of thought too for a minute there. So I'm just gonna take a breath. And I guess I'll make a somewhat of an astrological joke here is like, because there's a part of me that wants to be like, that's very Piscean of me. I'm a Pisces. Like, it's very, very Pisces of me to be able to just shapeshift and mask and like go with the flow and like show whoever, whatever personality or face like they want to see. And then I feel like there's so many memes on the internet right now that it's like, my therapist told me like maybe I'm actually masking and it's not because I'm a Pisces, like, or whatever it may be. But let's take a moment, if you don't mind, to talk about spoons. What does that mean? Because not everybody really understands that. And I personally, even just this last week, maybe, I don't know, sometimes I exaggerate in my statements. I've also noticed that about myself. But I like, I personally, like, I recognize that I like hit a wall at some point in my work mm-hmm. days. And then I'm like, I've like come to this epiphany. I'm like, oh shit, like that's a limited amount of spoons. Like when you come to a place where you cannot give your energy to something maybe that even excites you still, like you just like you've come to the end of your rope. That's just been like an interesting realization for me personally to be like, oh, like I think I have a limited amount of spoons. And so I'm just curious, would you like to share? I mean, I guess I basically just said what that means, but would you care to describe it a little different or better?
Sure. I really wish I could remember the person who came up with this, but I can't. But I believe it was someone that had a disability. And they were trying to explain to their friends what it was like to live with this kind of finite amount of energy. Mm-hmm. So it might be that, say, you have 5 spoons, and when you get home, you need to cook, shower, maybe complete an essay, right? And maybe each one of those takes 3 spoons in and of itself to complete, but you only have 6.
Mm.
So it be- Yes, so you need 9 spoons, but you only have 6. So what do you do? What do you compromise? Yeah. And I think that was something that I had worked with Maritza on, in that like they were like, sometimes you are just gonna have to spend the money. If you have the resources and it's gonna make your life better, spend the money, because if you can buy yourself like that kind of energy. So for example, I was really against it, but I now sometimes get meals delivered, because the energy that on the days where I'm really exhausted and I don't have to,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to, I don't have to push through it in order to eat or in order to feed myself. And I have like a lot of tactics and strategies around minimizing the amount of spoons that I need to do things. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm obviously very happy to share any of those if they're useful, but yeah, it's basically that kind of the end. It's like almost like a unit of energy, like the unit of energy you need to do things, and because you have certain differences, you may not have as many of as other people, or those same things may be much more difficult for you to do.
Yeah, that's a great explanation, thank you for that. It's I'm finding in my own journey that it sometimes it's a little challenging to specifically know like how many spoons I have and how many spoons things take, but mm-hmm. It's helpful a little bit for me to have somewhat of a relationship with time and recognizing like how much time gets away from me, and tracking time in a little bit can help me. I'm like last night, for example, I was like, okay, I've got this idea in my head. Like I'm making dinner right now. I've got to eat dinner. I'm going to answer some emails. I want to watch TV. I want to get a workout in, and I'm going to go to bed. And it was 8:00, and I like to go to bed at 10, right? Yes. Laura's like waving her hands. Like, yeah. So ridiculous.
Like, that's not possible. And also that is exactly the kind of thing I'll do. And then I'll be upset with myself because I didn't manage to achieve this list of things that on no planet was it achievable.
Exactly. And so as I was making dinner, I was like, okay, bless you. What a great list you have in your mind. Like, let's write this down. And I like kind of put a couple of times, like I was like, okay, I'd like to be getting ready for bed no later than, or I want to be working out and getting ready for bed no later than 9:30. And as I like wrote it down for me personally, and it, of course this shifts too, but especially last night as I was writing it down, I was kind of able to let it go. Like I didn't end up working out. I didn't end up reading all the emails, you know, like I just kind of let myself relax into the evening. I made dinner, I watched TV, I got ready for bed, and I went to sleep, you know? And so that's kind of, I guess, one way that I try to manage my own spoons. Mm-hmm. And
may
yeah,
I share a resource?
Please, yeah.
So I've recently come across this. I think it's called goblin.tools. I will send the link to Courtney and make sure it's in the show notes. But basically, it's like an AI that will break specifically for neurodivergent people that really struggle with like task management. And you can sort of, a lot of people call it neurospicy as like a more inclusive term. Mm-hmm. So you can specify your level of spiciness by changing the number of chilies. So it might be something like, create me a packing list for traveling or something, and it will literally break down all of the steps that you need to do. So things like that can be really helpful.
Cool.
So this is the thing you're describing is time blindedness, or that's what it's commonly called. That's actually kind of a really ableist way of describing it. So like I've heard it described in another way that's again just flown out of my brain. Like trouble with time perception, basically.
Yeah.
But this is one thing that I think is actually really interesting when you look at like capitalism and cultural context, because I have been late for stuff my whole life, apart from if my parents were like, getting me to school or something. But like that was their thing. I was on time for that. And I never had an issue with it. I never internalized that. I was always like, I'm just late. And I think that's because of the context that I grew up in. So in Cyprus, which is where I grew up, so it's a small island in the Mediterranean, if you're not familiar, it's very chill, very laid back. So being late, being 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes late for things is normal, accepted, like pretty common. So I was just like, okay, cool. It must just be a cultural thing. Like, I'm just used to this. So I never really made the effort when I came to the UK, unless it's something like very important, like a doctor's appointment, where if I'm late, it's going to mess up, the whole surgery for the morning or whatever. Like, I'm not going to do that, or I'm going to do my absolute best not to. I'm probably going to, it will involve me sprinting at some point, because I think something that takes 20 minutes will take 5. Like,
Right.
genuinely, my brain feels like I can bend time. But
Yes.
anyway, so it wasn't until I heard about this in terms of ADHD that I was like, oh my God, hold on. Is that what this is? And then I'm like, yes, Laura, that is exactly what this is. Like, you've seen this play out time and time and time again, even when you're trying desperately to be on time. Even when you set the reminder, you do everything, you're still gonna make it by the skin of your teeth. I found it like a really interesting reflection on the ways that it's the way society is that makes these things quote unquote disordered or problematic, right? So like often autistics are kind of just like described as weird if they have like an unusual quote unquote special interest, like the stereotype is the boy in the trains, right? But so what if that, if you reframe that, what if that special interest is something that's incredibly useful? I mean, it doesn't have to be useful, have your special interest around whatever you want it to be, but like
Yeah.
the cultural context around it also really informs the way that you feel about it. But as you were talking about the time blindness thing, I need to stop saying that word. As you were talking about that, I was like, oh, I recognize that so hard that it's not even funny. And again, circling back to the work thing, like I have blocked out 9 to 9:30 in my diary. Like it shows as out of office, because I need for my own sanity that time to know that if I need to be in the office and I'm running late, I have that buffer. And a lot of people will be like, just try and do it earlier. I promise you, if I could, I would. Like
Yeah.
I cannot. Like I have
Right.
tried. It is not through lack of trying. It is
Yes.
just, this is the strategy I have found, and it works for me.
Yeah. I love that. So we're clearly saying, like, in society, there's the focus on like being normal, neurotypical behavior, people that don't have a problem getting places on time, can't relate. But my next question is like, how do you think we can shift, and we've kind of touched on this a bit, but how do you think we can shift the narrative to recognize and appreciate these unique strengths and perspectives that neurodivergent individuals okay, just creating words, that's another thing, I love it. Okay, bring to the table. Did that make sense? Do you want me to repeat it?
No, I got you. I got you.
Okay.
I think for one, it's kind of like generally having like a really, really affirming way of kind of looking at the world and like seeing things, because I always kind of think the more diverse, whether it's like the languages or the cultures or the neurotypes in this case, the more diverse something is, the more rich and like enjoyable that experience is, right? Like, and I think for me, the answer feels really weirdly obvious in a way that I'm like, I don't know if this is helpful, but it's also like make sure you're treating people as like a fucking human, right? Like,
Hell yeah.
appreciate them, listen to them. Like, what do they want? What do they need? And trust them and believe them when they say, this is what I want or this is what I need. And I think also, like, if you get to know people, you start to realize, like, the way that their brains work and how powerful it is. So, like, it is only recently, and when I say recently, I mean within the last 2 weeks, that, like, so neurodivergent brains are meant to be really good at, like, ADHD brains are meant to be really good at pattern recognition. So, like, you can see the through line through an argument and recognize things really quick, which means generally I'm a very fast learner.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until someone was not getting something and I could feel myself being very frustrated. And I was just like, why don't they get this? And I'm like, Laura, your brain in this respect is faster than theirs. Maybe be a little bit nicer. Like, internally, I was not a dick to this person, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's recognizing things like that and just being like, oh. And I think in the beginning, I sort of mentioned that, like, or I think I mentioned that some of the way the diagnostic criteria is written is very, like, inaccessible. So sometimes what would happen is I'd read it and be like, no, I don't do that. That's not me. And then someone would describe their lived experience of it. And I'd be like, oh my God, that is absolutely me. And until a couple of months ago, I didn't really think I had the pattern recognition thing. And then I remembered a situation once where, so for context, my sort of first boyfriend, first person I was in love with, was dyslexic. And, oh God, I don't know, maybe like 8, 9 years later, I meet this guy, we start dating, and I ask this question. I'm like, are you dyslexic? Like, and Jesus Christ, like, now I would not have asked that question, but it just blurted out of me. And he's like, yeah, how did you know? And I was like, I don't know, I could just tell. And what I now realize as I've, like, gone back through that memory is that they obviously have they have similar patterns in communication, the same quote-unquote mistakes they would make, the way the adjustments their brains would make for a spelling of a word that I recognized. And I was like, oh, you're dyslexic. And I just knew. Yeah. And I'm like, Laura, that's pattern recognition.
Wow.
But I didn't realize until, you know, you go back over the memories as you're kind of looking at things through a new lens.
Right.
So I think sometimes it's also saying, like, what do they bring to the table? Like, whether it's, like, out-of-the-box thinking or, like, what, you know, the ability to improvise or thinking on your feet, or knowing that, like, someone who's neurodivergent might be really good in a crisis because they're just like, oh, I'm good at this. Normal life completely fucks me up. Crisis, I am cool as a cucumber. I'm good. You know, like, things like that.
Yes, yes. Ah, that's a really beautiful perspective. I love just bringing it back to respecting each other as human beings and remembering, neurodivergence or not, like, we all have our own lived experiences that make us who we are and how we are in the world. And I think that through that lens, it really offers just a little bit more compassion, acceptance, understanding. And again, it's like, somewhat of like a mirror, you know, of that, like, or a two-way street, possibly, you could also say, of like taking care of yourself first and working through that self-acceptance in order to be able to accept other people. Because if you haven't accepted that within yourself, it's going to be really fucking challenging to be able to sit there and accept it in somebody else.
And I think as well, so my partner's likely also neurodivergent, and we struggle with different things. So, like, we have some things are very similar and other things I'm like, how do you not notice this? But in me understanding more about the ways that it plays out, I understand more of their experience, and I'm able to be more compassionate in our interactions with each other. So I think that level of understanding for me makes a bit, I was definitely a Y child, so me understanding things makes a huge difference.
Oh yeah, that was my favorite word as a kid, because it had always had an answer, like, why? oh my gosh. Well, I know we had a couple other questions on our notes, but I do feel like in general we've kind of covered everything, and I'm just wondering, is there anything in closing that you care to share or want to say, or words of advice, or...
I think words of advice would be, no matter how unconventional, if it works for you, try it. So, for example, I'll give it. So I work from home, right? Things should be very easy in terms of me eating and drinking. Not so much. I know that if I'm working from home and if my food isn't there and immediately grabbable, I sometimes will not eat, or I'll eat something like, you know, way past when I'm hungry, and it won't be as maybe like nutritionally sort of dense as I want it to be. So I've realized that no, I actually need to prioritize that and make it as easy as possible for me to do things. So I think if you can find a way to make something easier for yourself, do it. Like, I think there's a, something I'm seeing a lot of is this real trend of like, I don't know, being, what's the word I want? Like being resilient. And like, no, no, no. You're already dealing with a hell of a lot of shit. Like, make your life as easy as you possibly can make it, and your brain will thank you.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not Marines. We're not, well, most of us probably aren't. Like, in this context, you know, you're not a Marine. You're not gearing up for war. You're not trying to build your mental state. You're trying to make sure that your life is as, like, soft and beautiful and gentle as you can be on yourself, right? And I think the other thing is, and maybe I need this reminder as much as anyone, but, like, give yourself grace. Because yeah. One of the things that Maritza said to me, and I was like, okay, I need to like adjust my expectations here. They were like, it's not if you have another meltdown, it's when. That is going to happen. And thankfully, because I know a lot of my triggers, I know all the sensory things that like can fuck me up, they happen much less frequently.
Yeah.
And the people around me know how to deal with them. And I have like a sensory kit for afterwards, like, and I have a lot of things that make it easier, but it doesn't mean that it won't happen. No, you can have all of the tools in the world, all of the strategies, all of the coping mechanisms, and you may and probably will still struggle. And it may be different from day to day or hour to hour. Like yesterday, my brain, you know, when puppies get the zoomies and they run around,
yeah,
my brain was like that. And I was really lucky because I had things that I needed to do, but I wasn't in a situation where I had to be focused in like a meeting, because in that instance it's very difficult. But I was able to kind of let my attention just fly around, and I still got things done in this kind of very haphazard way that someone else looking at would have probably been like, the fuck? But it worked for me, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I think also, finally, I swear I'm going to stop talking, but
oh, you're good.
Being able to pivot, right? Like, so sometimes what a strategy that might work for you one day might not work for you the next, or something that has been working for you might not continue to work. And I think the less tied you are, and I say this as someone who, if something changes my plans, even if it's an internal plan that I have not communicated with anyone, oh my God, yeah, I can't stand that.
Mm-hmm.
Be as flexible as you can be with yourself and your plans and the things that you're going to, the ways you're going to try and address this.
Yeah. Whew. Well, that was just the most amazing a little piece of advice that you could leave us with. I feel like now I want to like jump into so much more. I feel like we could talk about this all day long. But
oh, absolutely.
Yes, I just want to say thank you for agreeing to have this conversation with me. I'm going to put, if I'm assuming you're comfortable, put your Instagram information in the show notes too, so people can follow you or reach out to you, I guess, if they just felt like it resonated.
Yeah,
I wanted to let you know.
So my account is private because work, quite frankly, like some people don't need to see my personal life. But if you say that you've, if like you message me and be like, oh, I heard you on this podcast, like, oh, I'll absolutely be like, can't guarantee the timeliness in which I will get back to you. It will either be like immediately or potentially several weeks later.
Yes.
But I will eventually get back to you.
I love that.
I love that laugh of like, I know, the laugh of recognition.
The exactly deep recognition there. It's either now or a few months later. Okay. Well, going to wrap this up then. Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Of course.
Wait a minute. It's the outro. I just want to take a quick moment to say thank you so much for being a part of this self-care creature movement. This is a movement for individuals, our communities, the planet. If you're looking to dive deeper into our community, the best place to start is with our free mini courses, or you can consider joining our SCC membership where you get access to all courses, all benefits, free for 5 days, and then it's a simple quarterly membership. We also have many more online and in-person offerings. You can join our email list to stay up to date, or just check out, you guessed it, the Self-Care Creature website, selfcarecreature.com. You can also be a part of the conversation and help form what this podcast is all about. Simply just go to the feedback form in the notes below where you can ask questions and share your thoughts. Lastly, we're gonna ask, would you please leave a review on whatever platform you're on right now? We would really love the help to find more creatures in the world just trying to learn to take care of themselves. Thanks for being here, and thanks for taking care of you.